Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Chris Sidorick. Most thought Boston City Councilor Ayanna Pressley would lose to 10-term incumbent Congressman Michael Capuano. He was well-liked by his constituents. He had a long record of being a progressive voice in a very liberal district. But despite all that, Pressley found herself delivering a victory speech last night to her supporters.
It is time to show Washington, D.C., both my fellow Democrats, who I hope will stand with us, and the Republicans who stand in our way, and to everyone in the 7th Congressional District, that change isn't waiting any longer. We have arrived. Change is coming, and the future belongs to all of us.
Congressman Capuano conceded just after 9 p.m.
We've done everything we could do to get this thing done. Today was no exception. The last 8 months, most of you have been working hard for us, and I will tell you that I'm sorry it didn't work out, but this is life, and this is okay. America is going to be okay. Ayanna Pressley is going to be a good congresswoman, and I will tell you that Massachusetts will be well served.
So how exactly did Pressley pull off such a big upset, and what does it mean for the future of the Democratic Party? Here to talk with me about that is Jennifer Smith. She's the news editor at the Dorchester Reporter. Jennifer, welcome back to Radio Boston.
Of course, thanks.
And also here with us is Reverend Mariama White Hammond, an activist and minister at the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain. Reverend White Hammond, thanks for being here.
Good to be here.
And again, listeners, we're going to open this up to you as well. If you have any thoughts or reactions to yesterday's results, feel free to give us a call. 1-800-423-8255. 1-800-423-TALK. So, Jennifer, I want to start with you. You obviously were immersed in this race right from the beginning. How did Pressley pull this out? What did her campaign do well?
I think the most important thing to look at is just that she had a message that seemed to really resonate with where the city's at right now. She was a very compelling figure. She was known to the city of Boston to begin with. So when people talk about this as kind of being an upstart versus an establishment figure narrative, I think that has to be an outside of Boston look at it, because those in Boston, of course, have been very familiar with her and her presence. So what she did was leverage the very things that have made her popular inside of the city, on top of her compelling backstory, and really just worked on narrowing those margins outside of Boston, where she wasn't quite as known a figure, and just made sure that she wasn't leaving anything to chance in those areas that really were her base in the city.
An interesting approach, and I would say maybe an untraditional campaign approach in the terms that she only ran one campaign ad. It was a Spanish language ad on Telemundo and Univision. What are your thoughts? Is that going to be a new model? Are TV ads not what they used to be?
It was a really smart approach. So I think one thing about that approach that speaks to the campaign in general is that she really had to know who her audience was, and she really had to know what they were paying attention to. So, for instance, she knew that she had a novel campaign. This is a narrative that everyone is very attuned to, given some of the other diverse candidates that have been running lately. So there was already going to be a decent amount of news coverage looking at this race. So she didn't really have to go out and put out these television ads if she could rely on people, for instance, reading the papers, listening to the radio, and really just kind of absorbing what she calls earned media, the media that she just generated through a normal campaign. She knew she was an unusual figure running for this kind of seat in Boston, so she really ran with that, and it seems to have paid off.
Reverend White Hammond, I want to bring you in here, and I just want to play you a little piece of tape that we have here. Reverend, I know you were in the room with Ayanna Pressley last night, and here is just a moment that she learned that she actually won. So there's about five more oh my gods that we cut off there, but take us into the room. What was it like?
Well, I think there's a couple things. I mean, I think one of the things that people have said is sort of what about the polls? And the tradition in polls is that you count on whoever has already showed up to show up again. And so if you can change the electorate, if you can motivate people who usually do not come out from primaries to show up, it totally changes the numbers. And so I think, you know, we haven't done all the crunching, but I think what we're going to find is people who generally tended only to show up for presidential elections, or people who only knew to come out in November were motivated to come out in September, some of them possibly for the first time. So I think there was a huge enthusiasm gap. I think that she's, again, as was said, a compelling candidate. And so she was able to move people to volunteer. I met a number of volunteers who'd never canvassed for a campaign before. They didn't even know how to read worksheets. They were learning how to do this, people that I know. And so you know, I think that enthusiasm gap was huge. If you change how big the pie is, then it throws everyone's numbers off, and I think that was a huge thing. So
I mean, throws numbers off does not even do it justice.
Well, I have to say,
he never polled under a double digit lead, and she won by almost 20 points.
Well, I have to be honest. Even as someone who was involved in the campaign, I thought it'd be awesome if it was like 5%.
I'm sure.
It was significantly more than that.
Yeah.
And again, I think this goes back to a lot of her message to the Democratic Party, which is, you know, if you think you can keep doing things the same way, you're missing what's happening, not just in the city of Boston, but really what's happening around the country. There are thousands of women running for office who probably never even considered that 5 years ago. And that is really a sign of how I think normal people are saying to themselves, wow, things have gotten pretty bad. Maybe we, the people, actually need to be more deeply engaged. And I think that was part of her message. And I think she was saying something that resonated with where people already are at this moment.
All right, I want to get in a couple of calls here. And listeners, you can join us at 1-800-423-8255, 1-800-423-TALK. Sarah from Somerville, you are in the district. I'm curious, what's on your mind, Sarah?
Yeah, so I was pretty much planning to vote for Capuano. I've always been really happy with him as my representative. I have no issues with any of his record. But then two things from Presley made me vote for her yesterday. One was hearing her talk about building a movement, about organizing people, about saying, I'm not just going to go and vote. I'm going to organize our district to push back against Trump's agenda, to push back against the hate that's going on, and that she sees herself as a leader of people, not just as someone going to make good progressive votes in Congress. And then the second piece is, you know, I'm a white voter from Somerville, and I felt like I really needed to use my vote in this instance as an opportunity to listen to those in the district who wanted her as our representative. And, you know, I would love it if our country would, like, pay reparations and do lots of big gestures, but I felt like this was one thing that I could control. If these people felt like she was the representative for our district, I could listen and use my vote in that way.
Sarah, I'm curious, when did you decide that you were going to vote for Presley?
Really recently. I heard the first debate that was on BUR, and I thought, you know, I'm not hearing anything that would sway me here. But then when I heard her again last week on BUR and she was talking about this movement building, I just got really inspired and realized that a representative in Congress is so much more than someone to just go do votes. And I had never really viewed our representative in that way before, and I'm really excited to see what she does, and I want to be organized by her.
Well, Sarah, thanks so much for the call. Reverend Whitehaven, I'm curious kind of your reaction hearing that.
Well, I mean, that's a lot of how I know Ayanna Pressley. The first time I met her, she was working in Senator Kerry's office. I was working with a group of young people organizing to protect their teacher who was in danger of deportation. This was pre-Trump. This was quite a few years ago. And the way she was responsive to me, particularly the way she was responsive to young people, was really impressive. I work with teenagers. I've seen her with teenagers in a couple of instances. And they're pretty good detectors of who's an authentic person and who's not. And so I think what was impressive is not just that she dazzled them, but she listened to them. And one of our young people ended up applying for an internship in her office. And so that, what our caller's talking about, that's what I've seen in actual practice. And I really think, like the caller said, That's what we need in this moment. I don't think it's good enough to send a bunch of people down to Washington and think they're going to all fight and argue and somehow it's all going to come out in a rosy way. I mean, it's pretty dysfunctional down there.
You don't say. Interesting that Sarah is calling from Somerville. Obviously, that was Capuano's base. Jennifer, he won Somerville by just over 100 votes. I mean, how shocking is that?
It was narrow, and she won Cambridge by almost the same margin as she did overall, and of course, dwarfed Boston. I think that you just hit on something really important there, as did the caller, which is when we're talking about the difference between selling people on a voting record or a difference between the two candidates as far as voting goes, Ayanna Pressley has always been very intentional about saying, don't look at me and say, would you vote on in along the same lines as Mike Capuano? I am looking to raise new issues, and where those issues are coming from has to be from you. So it's really kind of trying to harness this advocacy perspective that might be a new thing for the district. And I believe in Somerville as well, that resonates as much as anywhere else. If you hear over and over again that the person running for office is looking to bring your voice to the national stage, not just act in your best interests, no matter if they're right or not, that's a big one.
That was a theme that she started to emphasize kind of towards the end of the campaign, was that her focus would be on different issues just based on who she was.
Yeah. People were really obsessed with the voting record in general.
I think both
candidates were pretty frustrated by that, actually, because one of the questions they kept getting over and over again is just, how are you different from each other? And at some point they're saying, you know, we're months into this campaign. If you can't tell the difference between us at this point, we can't really help you. We can just try and phrase it differently.
Well, she did talk last night in her victory speech about some of the issues that she wanted to focus on. So I just want to play a quick cut of that.
For our brothers and sisters behind the wall, change can't wait. To our immigrants worried about the knock on the door, change can't wait. To women whose rights are perpetually under attack, change can't wait.
So Reverend Wei Hammond, I know you have been a supporter of hers pretty much from the beginning. What are you hoping to see specifically from her when she gets to Washington?
Well, I think, you know, it's not just her. I mean, I think Ayanna, again, talks about this movement. But when you look at it, Nika Elguardo, who won in Jamaica Plain, Liz Miranda, who won in Dorchester, not too far away. They're, you know, celebration parties weren't too far. Rachel Rollins, who also won. I think the reality is the first part is getting elected, and I think that that's exciting. And the second part is how to govern and how to do differently. And that's both for Ayanna as she, figures out how to make it work in a dysfunctional community in Washington. But that's also for the electorate. And part of my reflection is this was very similar to what Obama did, right, in 2008. And many of us got excited. I went down to the inauguration. And then by February, most of us went back to the way things already were. So it's not enough for people to be excited by what can happen and vote for her. Now's the next piece, which is if we want to be organized, we have to respond to the organizing. And that means her really thinking about how she organizes her office and her staff in a way that will organize people and that will work with people. But it also means us as an electorate being ready to be more engaged, not saying that we're just going to show up, you know, twice a year.
I did my good deed.
Right,
I cast my ballot.
Right. And that remains to be seen. I have a lot of hope. I see why I work with young people. I see what they're doing, the marches that are happening. People are showing up and doing more than they ever have before. And so I do think we have very good signs that that is possible. But as somebody who's experienced it in the past, the euphoria doesn't always carry. And so that will be the real challenge for her and for us as members of the district. How do we keep this feeling turning into real boots on the ground for the next level of work we need to do?
Listeners, we want to hear from you as well on this. Feel free to give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. It's 1-800-423-TALK. Donna from Onset, you've got a thought here. Give us what's on your mind, Donna?
Yes, I'll try and be quick. I wasn't able to vote for either one of them because I live in Onset. But I had heard Mike Capuano many, many times, and I liked his policies and his ideas. I'm actually delighted that Ayanna won. I'm sad that he lost. And the point I want to make is that as a very tried and true Democrat, I actually thought that we were spoiled for choice. And I hate to think that with, you know, he's been in for a couple decades, and if he goes out, I would like to see some kind of reaching out on both sides. As an example, in the New York election, where, and I don't know her name, unfortunately, the young lady who won, very dynamic. Yep. The person she defeated, he reached out immediately for support, like Bernie is saying now about, Bernie said about Hillary, let's, you know, throw her support here. And I really think that what has bothered me on the national level, especially, is where you get this this attitude of like, oh, the Democratic Party really needs to sort themselves out. They don't know which way they're going. And I really disagree. I think we've got a lot of great talent there. We might have to kind of combine it up a little bit. So I'm very happy that she won. But I just wish that there'd be some way that there could be, you know, like the reason Barack Obama and Joe Biden were such a great team is because, you know, the worries people might have had about Barack is that he was maybe, you know, under experience. And then you have Joe Biden, who kind of reaches a certain type of people. And he, you know, he had that statesman experience, and it just worked very well. I think one of Hillary's problems, where I like Tim Kaine, she probably should have had maybe one of the Castro brothers or something, because you have to have people that complement.
It's all about
the
balance. Yeah, and Donna, and thank you so much for the call. I appreciate it. It's an interesting dynamic because you have a congressman who spent 10 terms serving his district. People there have a relationship. They know him. They feel they like him and trust him. So there could be some potential hurt feelings or kind of the spurned voters from the Capuano camp. But this wasn't really a nasty race. They kept it pretty friendly and pretty positive. What do you guys think in terms of reactions now from the Capuano camp bringing those people back to the Democratic Party?
Well, there was a unity rally today. Yeah. So I think that there is a good chance. I mean, I think where there's one piece that I'm still waiting to see is, unfortunately, the rhetoric I was hearing from the Capuano campaign was that this was just about identity politics. And I thought that was a major misread of what it was that people wanted. However, at this point, a message has been sent, and I think there's an opportunity for them to read it differently. Like, I felt a little insulted by that read because I said, I'm telling you why I'm voting, and I don't think I mentioned the fact that she was a black woman. It's these other three things, and you're not hearing that.
Right.
But I think
it was a factor, though, in the race.
If I have two great candidates, it does matter. Yeah. But that wasn't the reason people were willing to go out and knock doors. That might have been enough to pull a lever, but it is not enough to make you give up your Saturday on a hot day to, you know, collect signatures or make calls. So I think the question is, for those folks, not just Capuano, but a lot of the folks who endorsed him, do they understand what the voters are trying to tell them from this victory? I really hope so, because I think that will make it much easier to work together to a next place. That's what I had hoped after Bernie and Hillary. That's not what happened. So I think Obama and Biden is an example of how it can go well. Hillary and Bernie is an example of it also can not go well.
What is it specifically you think they're trying to tell voters?
I think as a person, you know, I almost considered unenrolling from the party. I've been so frustrated by the lack of clarity about where it's going, the unwillingness to sort of let new voices in, telling people to wait their turn. I mean, when else do we make shifts if not in the crisis that things are in right now? So I hope, and I know a number of the top Democrats, I had this conversation with them 2 months ago, and it wasn't fully heard, and I'm wondering if maybe we can have a different conversation. We don't need to talk about who said what. We just need to ask the question, how do we move forward and how do we hear what people are saying and follow that?
Yeah,
I think there often is this really problematic way that we talk about identity politics as well, as though there's something that's divorced from a person's experience or divorced from their platform, or it just is this random reason why people vote, like it's a Pavlovian, oh, I see that person and they look like me and I vote for them, which is insane. One thing I think that Ayanna did do a decent job of communicating, especially toward the end, as she was really honing this message, was Of course I'm a black woman, and of course that impacts my experience. And because of those experiences that I've had, by virtue of being a woman, by virtue of being a survivor, by virtue of being black, by virtue of being a Bostonian, by virtue of being a Dorchester resident, all of these things influence not just whether or not you should vote for me, but what my policies would be that I would push for. And I think that now, if I'm judging from the unity rally that I was at today, I think they heard that loud and clear, that if they don't figure out how to incorporate a person's identity into their platform without dismissing it as identity politics, they're going to lose more races.
Well, that's Jennifer Smith. She's a news editor at the Dorchester Reporter. Jennifer, thanks so much for stopping by.
Of course, anytime.
And Reverend Mariama White-Hammond. She's the activist and minister at the Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plan. Reverend White-Hammond, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Stay with us. There's more ahead. We're going to jump into why Nike would sign one of the most divisive athletic personalities out there. This is Radio Boston.